any basis over there.
There we go. No, it's fine.
Well, I don't mean to imply
as long as it's picking up.
I caused this, but I added to the argument. I used, in our luncheon meetings, sometimes I have lunch with each man, and we were talking about the problems in the relationship between the faculty and the administration,
mm-hmm.
and I always raised this issue. This institution could possibly get along without any administrators. It cannot get along without a faculty. It exists because there is a point of contact between the faculty and the student. That's, and everything else is subsidiary to that.
Right.
The heating system, the cooling system, the pencils and the erasers are solely there so that that faculty mind can meet that student mind. All other is subsidiary and auxiliary.
It's supposed to serve that purpose.
Yeah. Okay.
And that gets
now,
distorted.
You could not say that to the present, I don't think. But Golding and Don Walker would carry on that tradition even more so. There's a powerful tradition through all my years here of faculty involvement in all the critical decisions affecting the institution.
Uh-huh.
And any president that came here had to recognize that we were used to meeting. It was very similar to the problem the Stuart Kings faced in England with the Parliament of England. They forgot that the Parliament had been accustomed for generations to meeting, that it had spokesmen in committees. It knew how to conduct public business. We knew how to conduct academic business. We knew the laws. Ned Joy was a walking compendium of the legal structure and often checked up administrators pointing out, oh, you can't do that, that's illegal.
Mm.
And we were accustomed to working and running quite a bit of the institution.
You were your own administrators.
No, we participated. It was a collegial thing.
Mm-hmm.
We participated. Heppner and Love wouldn't think of children in a strong act without the committees being involved in it. This is what we have to do. Golding represented a transition. He paid respect to that to a considerable degree, but he was more of the managerial style.
Yes.
Then, when he left, they, by that time, out of the chancellor's office, there was a kind of, I won't say vendetta, but there was a feeling that San Diego had been off the reservation too long. It had independence under Love.
It was too free.
It was
it
too
ran
free.
Its own.
It had, you've heard this before.
No,
it,
I haven't. But
well, it had to be brought into this administrative hierarchical structure so that everything that was done was sanctioned by the chancellor. For example, they did not like it, as I understand, when we invited John F. Kennedy to speak here. They did not like it. See,
you know, I wasn't going to ask you this. I was going to ask Ned Joy this, but you tell me. It's interesting. I thought that there
we
might
gave
have
him
been
an honorary
problems.
Degree.
Yes.
They didn't like
they
that
didn't
at
like
all.
That.
Well, there
but
are 18 other
there.
Jealous institutions. That's what you get.
I thought that might have been a problem, but
no.
I wasn't
oh,
sure.
Time and again, I was called up to the chancellor's office frequently to explain actions that we had taken here. The faculty wasn't supposed to take that.
Mm-hmm.
I told it, Chelsea, I told the people up there, look, we could eliminate your office.
We don't need you.
We don't need you. You can't eliminate me. There's no education. But I can eliminate you. They didn't like to hear that.
Did you ever have any real confrontations like
yes.
that?
Oh,
you
yes.
really get into some oh, real heated
yeah,
arguments?
Definitely. But I told them to their face. I mean, this is what they didn't like about us, because we never backwatered. We had great respect for what this institution was achieving in this difficult community.
Mm-hmm.
It was moving up rapidly, far out in front of the community. It doesn't realize to this day how far we had moved. It's regarded as the flagship of the 19 units in many ways. It's the first to go into the joint doctoral committees, all kinds of things
yes.
that found it.
Yes.
They didn't like that either. And Love regarded the chancellor's office as hardly worth paying attention to.
But he had to deal with them.
Well, he did.
Of course,
he did.
But
at any rate,
too bad you can't secede from that.
It gave us a status that none of the others had, and I. Then when the chancellor's office and the trustees had to replace Golding, I think they decided that they must get a policeman and break us to the wheel. And they chose a man who is strictly an administrator.
Yes.
He is the technician. And I remember I had just retired when he came here, and I remember playing golf with him. He loves to play golf. He's fun to play with. We had a grand time. And at the 19th hole, I hope you don't quote this.
Okay? Would you like me to turn the tape recorder off?
Yeah, right now.
Right.
Yeah. No, Walker...
Walker was not hired.
Despite the fact that he handled the student uprising with some skill, I think the criticism was that he was too tolerant of the faculty views. He didn't give a sign that he would use brutal force, that kind of thing. They wanted a strict public administrator. They got one. A man who goes by the rules.
I see.
And
okay, that's interesting. I didn't have any...
You
I really
probably
didn't
heard
know about
that before.
No, I had never heard that before.
Oh, well, I have some more little anecdotes, but I don't think you need them.
We've covered. This is
I know there's one embarrassing thing happened, just for fun.
All right, tell me.
In the 50s, I think it was probably around 1951, they'd invited Thomas Mann to speak here.
Mm.
Well, this is going to be a great day. He was going to speak to the entire faculty and the student body. And in those days, we had no decent place to meet. It was a women's gym. That's where chairs and everything set up. Big crowd. Well, there was a big welcoming committee. After all, this is one of the most distinguished living men, the lineal descendant of Goethe, you know. And all the dignitaries were over at the administrative center, and he was coming in with his limousines and so on, all the group that traveled with him. And the president asked me if I would go over and stand at the front door of the women's gym. To help usher them in, and so on. So I did. There I was, quite out, nobody standing around me. There was no welcome committee. Lo and behold, here comes a string of big black cars and cops and all kinds of things. And here Thomas Mann comes in. Nobody to greet him, just me.
Just you.
I'm
you
the
were the
one.
Greeting party.
It was hilarious and embarrassing. And I was flabbergasted because I knew that they had planned it. And this was not the way to greet one of the most distinguished global citizens. The president was over there.
Was the greeting party supposed to be elsewhere? Huh?
Well, so I spoke to him in German. He speaks heavily accented English, but I thought I'd make him feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
And spoke to him my best ability in German, and said there's been a misunderstanding, and I regret to say that all the people who wish to welcome you are over with the president.
Mm-hmm.
No matter, in we go. So I went in with Thomas. We finally got the mess cleaned up. I got a message over there right away, and everybody came in. Well, that was an interesting thing.
Those things happen.
That has nothing to do with the interview, but it was amusing.
Well, how about other guest speakers that came to campus? Do you have any other
I didn't have much to do with that. I stayed away from it. Mm. I didn't have anything to do with the Kennedy thing.
But your insights as far as the Kennedy thing goes are
there
very
was
interesting.
One event. About the first year I was here, I think Heppner or somebody, the committee, invited the superintendent of public instruction in Los Angeles City Schools to come down and deliver a commencement address. Well, his name was Austin McDonald. Austin McDonald had been my physical ed teacher, gym teacher, in Mission High School in San Francisco in 1925. So I did meet him.
That did was, you remind him of that?
Oh, yes, he remembered me. But that was kind of amusing.
Oh, my.
Well, have you got any more of it?
I have, yes. Let me see here. Let me review my questions just to make sure that I have covered everything. Wanted to ask you about your own research.
Well,
have you had it? Did you ever have much of a chance to do?
I did. Actually, my PhD was in German history, in the Bismarckian period, and I did a kind of a political biography of an opponent of Bismarck.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Eugen, E-U-G-E-N, Richter, R-I-C-H-T-E-R. In our society, he would be something like a member of the Republican Party. But there, he was a radical. He resented the power of the state that Bismarck applied in the Prussian system. That's what I did.
Uh-huh.
But I never did anything further with it. So I drifted off into military research and did all my public writing in military history,
uh-huh.
Air Force history. And I still do a little of that. I lecture annually to the Navy for a seminar down here on the 19th century. One of our people, Al Cooks.
Yes.
You may know him.
Quite military historian.
Well, Al has a course, graduate seminar, which is under the Newport, Rhode Island Naval War College. He gives a graduate seminar down here, and I go down and take part in that occasionally. That's all I do with it.
Yeah.
And even that is not military. I do political history for them.
Uh-huh.
But,
well, you have to keep
Oh, you have to do a
little
reading for it,
yes.
Yeah. But I should possibly have stayed with military history as an elder. I simply got tired of it.
Well, you've got to change.
Well,
after a while, you can't stick.
It was wide open. And, for example, after we've been here for 4 years, only 5 years teaching, the Air Force wanted me to drop out for 2 years, and family and all, and go to Germany and work with the German Air Force generals in writing the history of the German Air Force on the Eastern Front.
Hmm.
And would I go and serve as a chief editor?
And you did not?
No, I turned it down.
And why?
Well, Margie was teaching in Chula Vista High School at the time, and the state of California was a kind of a jealous employer in those days. We wouldn't have gotten retirement credit for it. It would cost me 2 more years of teaching. There are many reasons, and Pete was in a private school here. I didn't care to disrupt all those things. We were just getting established.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, you hadn't been there.
But if I had done that and gone on with that permanently, I could have been more than that.
Who knows where you would be now?
I enjoy teaching too much.
Teaching can be an awful lot of fun, huh?
Well, I look forward to every day.
Yeah, that's great.
Every
yes,
year I
is.
Went there. It was fun.
Was
I got paid
teaching,
for a hobby.
Yeah. Was teaching as much fun for you right before you were going to retire as it was when you were starting out? The reason why I ask that is because did you see a change in student attitudes? Do you think that students were different?
I left in 1974, and the great changes came after that.
Mm.
One point I would like to make for the interview is that my generation had the best years. We had the generation emerging from the trials of the war. We had students in the class who had been generals, captains, admirals, GIs.
So you must have had some pretty interesting class
highly
discussions,
motivated,
huh?
Highly experienced in a deadly business.
Yes.
We had support from the state, never adequate, but support. We were not overloaded. We kept our classes of modest size. And I rode that up to 74, from 47 right on through. Those were the best years. After 74, from all comments that I've heard, then came the crush, the decline in support relative to what the university was getting, and the increasing demands upon us. And that apparently has gotten much worse. And then the university changed its name, it became a university, and then we had a wonderful opportunity. And I argued, I wrote a speech about that one time, what a wonderful opportunity we had to make a unique institution, make it an upper-level teaching institution like Pomona or some other place, but public.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We had that choice, but we chose to go the Berkeley road. Accent on research, if it's day,
support. Struggling
and
to do so.
So
just not reaching it.
We became neither. We lost our teaching, and we could not possibly gain what Berkeley has. So we fall in the slot in between.
You see yourself very lucky at having been there during those
the good
best
days.
Years.
And that is the fate of this whole system right now. It has, to varying degrees, probably abandoned a part of its heavy accent on teaching and reached for something that can be gained only at the price of an extraordinary drain on its faculty.
Yes.
We teach 12 hours. Mm. Berkeley teaches 6.
And the lack of support given to the students. What are the students missing out on as well?
Berkeley pays their people $62,000. They pay these people $50,000 or something like that, and ask them to do twice as much. And the extraordinary thing is, particularly in our department, history, we have superb things coming out. There, two of our members that are in the History Book of the Month Club, Bill Hanchett and I guess John Cox, they write bestsellers.
Yes.
And they've done superb work on top
on
of...
On top of that incredible
that's right.
load of teaching.
Well, something has to give. Marriages give.
I see an incredible amount of strain.
It's a heavy, and, heavy... A double burden is what they're putting on the backs of the mm-hmm. faculty here. I was arguing that we can do that, but you have to have support. And we had enough support for teaching.
Yeah. This will be my last question. I don't want to keep you too much longer. What do you think is going to give in this present-day situation? Something is not going to stay the same.
I think that we are developing a two-tier system in the United States. And the public schools and the public universities are being overwhelmed with the pressure of democratic education for all.
Mm-hmm.
What you will get is a controlling, directive elite coming out of the high-cost private schools. The great academic rewards and awards, prizes, in the American educational system do not come from the public supported schools. The Rhodes Scholarships and all the others tend to come predominantly from Reed College, Swarthmore, and Pomona Knox, and that sort of thing.
The schools where the students are required to think.
All right. Not only that, but they also require $16,000 to $18,000 a year.
Well,
and,
yes, that's true.
So you get a divided system. That isn't to say that the universities will not continue to be at the top rank of research. They will continue to do that, even though they don't pay as much in state here as they do at Harvard or Stanford. They have the facilities, and they have the long, certainly Berkeley has the long-term tradition of high-level research. Don't fault it. For graduate school, you couldn't do better.
Right.
I did it there, and our people are very well trained.
Mm-hmm.
Undergraduate, the proper place to do it right was in the state colleges, and we flubbed it.
I think that's been lost now.
We are being pressured by numbers
mm-hmm.
and by trying to emulate Berkeley. And the state will not support that.
Yes.
So we're taking it out of the hide of the faculty. We promote and we grant retention. Tenure on the basis of publications.
But the time is not allowed for them to do that.
I spent more hours going over PhD dissertations and articles, editing them for faculty members.
Who were trying to get ahead by publishing and research.
Retention or something else.
Yes.
Just
I know that pressure. I've seen it.
Terrific.
Work on many faculty members there.
See, I had to rewrite one... 3 PhDs completely.
Wow.
Not all from here. One was from New Mexico, one was from UCSD. And one was here. Semi-literate. My reward was a set of golf clubs. No, and two cases of Cinzano Asti Spumante.
Well, at least you were paid for some of your work, not nearly enough.
At least I didn't have to declare it on the income tax. Let's see if there's anything that I think we've covered quite a bit, but if
we have, and I may be asking you a couple more questions.
I mean,
in the
feel
future.
Free anytime. I could tell you about our softball team. We didn't get to that. When I came here, I founded a faculty softball team.
You did?
And we played it in the Interfraternity League and won 7 out of 10 games.
When was this?
1949 and 50.
Oh, how 51. Fun. I bet you everybody must have really enjoyed that.
Have you talked with Charles Lamden?
No.
He came here,
and
I did. L-A-M-D-E-N. He's still teaching full-time.
He was on my list.
And he's a man that met off in the business world and worked for an international accounting firm and was head of their Paris office for about 10 or 11 years. And he's on the faculty now. L-A-M-D-E-N.
Oh, wait, I did speak to him. I think he was at the luncheon
okay.
that I went to. Yeah.
By all means,
we made contact
see
with him,
him
at least.
He was on our softball team. He's one of you.
I'll make sure I ask him that one.
Al Olson came here in the early days. He was graduate in the athletic manager.
Mm-hmm.
And well, there were quite a few people over there in the physical education department that came right after the war.
Yeah, it's kind of
although they weren't as involved. Al Olson was involved. He would be a good one to see from the athletic point of view.
Really? Because that's something that we really don't have very much information
well,
on.
He
I
would
must admit that a lot of the history that I'm gathering is lopsided and it doesn't go much into athletics.
By all means, see Al Olson. He's very thoughtful. He was a professional baseball pitcher for the Padres and the Boston Red Sox.
Mm.
And he was a baseball coach or a tennis coach here at the time. Then he was a graduate athletic manager. And he can give you a side that will curl your ears. Pressure in the tone. You
really
ought to get that in there.
On. I'm going to have to talk to him because I don't have anything on that.
He is, he has very strong feelings about that because he was mixed up in it right over years.
I bet he was. Not a pleasant place to
be. I could alert him. Well, I have his number and I could call him and alert him to the fact that he ought to begin thinking about it if you will contact him.
That would be great. Yes, I definitely will.
I'm sure that he'd be delighted if he's in town. He travels quite a bit. But I'll tell you, he won't tell you this. Al was head over heels in athletics, and he was a high school coach, too. He's also an excellent student, he thinks. And I had him in a 19th century intellectual history course, 19th century Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of my best students. And when he was pitching full-time for the Padres, on the road half the time, and he told me a funny story. One time, one of the trainers of the Padre baseball team saw him before a game in San Francisco, and he was reading, I think, De Tocqueville or something. What are you reading? And he said, well, it's homework. He says, the business of a pitcher is to throw balls, not to read.
Poor guy. Being pulled every which way.
Al is an let's say, a self-taught scholar. He had all the instincts. He loves learning,
mm-hmm.
wide reading, far beyond athletic.
Uh-huh.
He'd
sounds
be
like
the finest man
person.
In town that you could talk to. And he used to talk to me about the pressures coming from the community for bigger and better athletics. You should get that into your story.
Yeah. I know that's one area that we are really lacking in information.
Well, he'll fill you up by that. And he goes back pretty far.
I can't think of anything that I need to ask you anymore, although I know that I'll have more questions after I leave. I'll be thinking of more things
sure.
to ask you.
Well, so we can get together.
Thank you very much.
We're going to
very
be here
enjoyable
for some time.
Interview.
I'm not going cruising or anything.